Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Mario Ritter, Susan Shand, and Brian Lynn. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Mario Ritter.
The leaders of Russia, Iran, and Turkey have promised to increase efforts to end unrest in Syria. Russian President Vladimir Putin, Iranian President Hassan Rouhani, and Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan met in Ankara on Wednesday. A joint statement by the three countries said they wanted to speed up their efforts to ensure calm on the ground in Syria. The three also promised that they would work towards the achievement of a lasting ceasefire there. The meeting came a day after United States President Donald Trump announced that a decision on withdrawing U.S. troops from Syria will be made soon. About 2,000 American ground troops are helping Kurdish fighters in the country's north. Their goal is to defeat supporters of the Islamic State militant group. IS forces once controlled large areas in Syria and northern Iraq. Speaking at the White House on Tuesday, Trump said the goal of defeating the Islamic State in Syria has largely been reached. He said his administration would be making a decision on the troop deployment soon, in coordination with others in the area. Trump said the United States sent troops to the Middle East 17 years ago and that it was time to bring them home. He said the military operation has been very costly for our country, costing about $7 trillion. Trump added that the mission has helped other countries more than the U.S. On Tuesday, the leader of the U.S. Central Command, Army General Joseph Votel, spoke at the U.S. Institute of Peace in Washington. He said that the IS forces in Syria had mainly been defeated. But he said the difficult part was still ahead.
And that is stabilizing these areas, consolidating our gains, getting people back into their homes, addressing the long-term issues of reconstruction and other things that will have to be done.
The Associated Press reports that some officials close to the president have advised against a speedy troop withdrawal. They include Central Intelligence Agency Director Mike Pompeo, who has been nominated to be Secretary of State. The president's comments have raised questions about the future of millions of dollars in aid to U.S. allies in the Middle East. The three countries meeting in Ankara also met last year during negotiations in Astana, Kazakhstan. The AFP news agency reports that Erdogan said the meeting Wednesday and the Astana talks were not an alternative to a United Nations peace process for Syria. The Turkish president told reporters that those at the talks were looking to get something done. "We must get results," he added. Russia, Turkey and Iran have been working together in recent months, although each side has different goals in Syria. Russia and Iran have supported the leadership of Syrian President Assad, while Turkey has called for his removal. Turkey has supported Syrian opposition fighters in their efforts to overthrow the Assad government. Turkey strongly opposes armed ethnic Kurdish groups operating in Syria. The United States has provided support to those groups in their fight against the Islamic State. Turkey's military has carried out an operation to force Kurdish militia fighters from the city of Afrin after launching an offensive inside Syria in January. Turkish officials say the Syrian Kurds have ties to Kurdish organizations banned in Turkey. I'm Mario Ritter.
Scientists are finding that the inside of Jupiter is just as interesting as the part of the planet's atmosphere that we can see. At the center of the planet is a liquid mixture of the elements hydrogen and helium. Scientists say large atmospheric jet streams and unusual gravitational qualities also exist. Scientists have been closely studying information sent back to Earth from NASA's Juno spacecraft. It has been orbiting the solar system's largest planet since 2016. Juno is providing researchers with what they called a new understanding of Jupiter's structure. Until now, scientists have had little information about what is below Jupiter's thick red, brown, yellow, and white clouds. Juno is designed to look beneath these clouds, said Yohei Kaspi. He is a planetary science professor with the Weizmann Institute of Science in Israel. Kaspi led part of the research using Juno's new measurements of Jupiter's gravity. Luciano Ias is an aerospace engineering professor at Sapienza University of Rome. He also led part of the research. On Jupiter, a gaseous planet without a solid surface, we can only gather information from orbit, he said. Jupiter is called a gas giant planet, unlike Earth and Mars, which are rocky planets. Jupiter is about 99% hydrogen and helium. Information sent by Juno showed that deeper under the surface, Jupiter's gas turns into a hot, dense, metallic liquid. The scientists said Jupiter's jet streams form stripes around the planet, moving about 3,000 kilometers below the cloud tops. Deep inside, the planet is made of a liquid hydrogen and helium mixture that turns as if it were a solid body. Planetary scientist Tristan Guillot of the University Côte d'Azur in Nice said the very center may be made of high-pressure and high-temperature rocks, and perhaps water. He added, but it is believed to be fluid as well, not solid. Juno showed a small but important asymmetry between the gravitational field of Jupiter's northern and southern halves. Caspi said this difference is driven by the large jet streams. The deeper the jet streams go, the more mass they contain, causing a strong effect on Jupiter's gravitational field, he said. The research was published in the journal Nature. Jupiter, the fifth planet from the Sun, is much larger than the solar system's other planets, measuring about 143,000 kilometers around at its equator. The planet is big enough for 1,300 Earths to fit inside. I'm Susan Shand.
Facebook has released a new tool that the company says will make it easier for users to evaluate news stories and publishers. The changes to Facebook's news feed were launched Tuesday for all users in the United States. The social media service says the tool aims to provide more context for people to decide for themselves what to read, trust, and share. The tool is based on research that identified the kinds of information that can be most helpful in deciding whether a news story is credible and trustworthy, Facebook said. It says users should have as much information as possible about publishers to help them recognize accurate news sources. U.S. users can now click a button in Newsfeed that pulls up a window called About This Article. In this window, Facebook provides more information about the news article and publisher. For example, a user can read basic information about the source of the article. People can also see whether the publisher is listed on Wikipedia. In addition, users can look at other recent stories posted by the publisher and can follow that company's Facebook page. The tool shows users how many people shared the article on Facebook and where they are. A user can also see which Facebook friends shared the story. Facebook says the new features were designed with suggestions from a diverse set of people and publishers. They included people from the company's Facebook Journalism Project. The project was created last year with the goal of strengthening ties between Facebook and news publishers. The company also announced it was beginning a test with a group of Facebook users. People involved in the test will be able to click on the name of an article's author to get more information about them. The information provided about the author will be very similar to the information on articles and publishers. Facebook says the goal will be to see whether people find it easier to decide on the credibility of an article when they have more information about the author. Facebook says it has been testing the news feed changes in other countries and is considering international launches in the future. The new tool is the latest in a series of moves by Facebook to answer its critics. Some people say the company has not done enough to stop misinformation from spreading on its service. Founder Mark Zuckerberg has promised to take steps to prevent the spread of false news on Facebook. The company also found evidence that false Facebook accounts created in Russia and other nations were used to try to influence American voters in the 2016 election. Facebook says it has taken steps to limit these activities. The most recent criticism of the company came last month when Facebook admitted it made mistakes in dealing with the private information of its users. Zuckerberg apologized for the mistakes. His apology came after news reports said a British research company was able to secretly collect private information on more than 50 million Facebook users. Zuckerberg said the company was continuing to investigate the incident. Several U.S. lawmakers have expressed concern about Facebook's privacy policies. On Wednesday, the U.S. House Energy and Commerce Committee announced it had called Zuckerberg to appear before the committee on April 11th to discuss privacy issues. I'm Brian Lynn.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. The Civil War ended in 1865. After that, tensions grew between Congress and the new president, Andrew Johnson. The Republican Party was still new. It was formed to oppose slavery. Radical members of the party controlled Congress. They wanted strong policies to punish the southern states that left the Union and lost the war. Standing in the way of the Republicans was Andrew Johnson, a Democrat. The president opposed radical efforts to force solutions on the South. He vetoed a number of programs that he thought interfered with rights given to the states by the Constitution. Kay Gallant and Harry Monroe continue the story of President Andrew Johnson.
In the congressional elections of 1866, radicals won firm control of both houses of Congress. They were able to pass a number of bills over the president's veto. But Johnson refused to stand aside in the face of radical attempts to seize all powers of government. This conflict between Johnson and the Congress caused much bitterness. Finally, the radicals decided to get him out of the way. For the first time in American history, Congress would try to remove the president from office. Under the United States Constitution, the House of Representatives has the power to bring charges against the president. The Senate acts as the jury to decide if the president is guilty of the charges. The Chief Justice of the United States serves as judge. If two-thirds of the senators find the president guilty, he can be removed from office.
Radicals in the House of Representatives brought 11 charges against President Johnson. Most of the charges were based on Johnson's removal from office of his Secretary of War. Radicals charged that this violated a new law. The law said the president could not remove a cabinet officer without approval by the Senate. Johnson refused to recognize the law. He said it was not constitutional. Radicals in the House of Representatives also charged Johnson with criticizing Congress. They said his statements dishonored Congress and the presidency.
The great impeachment trial began on March 5, 1868. The president refused to attend, but his lawyers were there to defend him. One by one, the senators swore an oath to be just. They promised to make a fair and honest decision on the guilt or innocence of Andrew Johnson. A congressman from Massachusetts opened the case for the radicals. He told the senators not to think of themselves as members of any court. He said the Senate was a political body that was being asked to settle a political question. Was Johnson the right man for the White House? He said it was clear that Johnson wanted to overthrow Congress. Other radical Republicans then joined him in condemning Johnson. They made many charges, but they offered little evidence to support the charges.
Johnson's lawyers called for facts instead of emotion. They said the Constitution required the radicals to prove that the president had committed serious crimes. Andrew Johnson had committed no crime, they said. This was purely a political trial. They warned of serious damage to the American form of government if the president was removed for political reasons. No future president would be safe, they said, if opposed by a majority of the House and two-thirds of the Senate.
The trial went on day after day. The decision would be close. 54 senators would be voting. 36 votes of guilty were needed to remove the president from office. It soon became clear that the radicals had 35 of these votes. Only 7 senators remained undecided. If one of the 7 voted guilty, Johnson would be removed. Radicals put great pressure on the 7 men. They tried to buy their votes. Party leaders threatened them. Supporters in the senators' home states were told to write hundreds of letters demanding that Johnson be found guilty.
A senator from Maine was one who felt the pressure, but he refused to let it force him to do what others wished. He answered one letter this way, "Sir, I wish you and all my other friends to know that I, not they, am sitting in judgment upon the president. I, not they, have sworn to do impartial justice. I, not they, am responsible to God and man for my action and its results." A senator from Kansas was another who refused to let pressure decide his vote. He said, "I trust that I shall have the courage to vote as I judge best."
In the final days before the vote, 6 of the 7 remaining Republican senators let it be known that they would vote not guilty. But the senator from Kansas still refused to say what his vote would be. His was the only vote still in question. His vote would decide the issue. Now, the pressure on him increased. His brother was offered $20,000 for information about how the senator would vote. Everywhere he turned, he found someone demanding that he vote guilty. The vote took place on May 16th. Every seat in the big Senate room was filled. The Chief Justice began to call on the senators. One by one, they answered, guilty or not guilty. Finally, he called the name of the senator from Kansas.
The senator stood up. He looked about him. Every voice was still. Every eye was upon him. It was like looking down into an open grave, he said later. Friendship, position, wealth, everything that makes life desirable to an ambitious man were about to be swept away by my answer. He spoke softly. Many could not hear him. The Chief Justice asked him to repeat his vote. This time, the answer was clearly heard across the room. Not guilty.
The trial was all but done. Remaining senators voted as expected. The Chief Justice announced the result. On the first charge, 35 senators voted that President Johnson was guilty. 19 voted that he was not guilty. The radicals had failed by one vote. When the Senate voted on the other charges, the result was the same. The radicals could not get the two-thirds majority they needed. President Johnson was declared not guilty.
Radical leaders and newspapers bitterly denounced the small group of Republican senators who refused to vote guilty. They called them traitors. Friends and supporters condemned them. None was reelected to the Senate or to any other government office. It was a heavy price to pay. And yet they were sure they had done the right thing. The senator from Kansas told his wife, "The millions of men cursing me today will bless me tomorrow for having saved the country from the greatest threat it ever faced."
He was right. The trial of Andrew Johnson was an important turning point in the making of the American nation. His removal from office would have established the idea that the president could serve only with the approval of Congress. The president would have become, in effect, a prime minister. He would have to depend on the support of Congress to remain in office. Johnson's victory kept alive the idea of an independent presidency. However, the vote did not end the conflict between Congress and the White House over the future of the South. That will be our story in the next program of The Making of a Nation.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.